This is Tamara reading The Decay from Donette Beckett. This is Tamara, and we're reading the Decatur Herald and Review for Wednesday, April 2nd. We'll start with articles from the front page. From Donette Becker in Decatur, Election 2025 Turnout, Voting Affects You Directly. We have a photo of Election Judge Brenda Reed handing a sticker to James Ho during the consolidated election at the Webster Cantrell Hall polling place in Decatur on Tuesday, April 1st. Voting in every election is important to 70-year-old Decatur resident Pat O'Mara. But I know I wish I would have done more homework, he said after voting in Tuesday's election. Although the consolidated election is tied directly to local government, the voter turnout is typically low. People don't vote anyway, O'Mara said, even if it is important. 4 hours after the polls opened, the judges at the Main Street Church of God had counted only 21 voters, and were expecting less than 100, zone leader Jim Dellert said. Among the issues on the ballots in that precinct were contested races for Decatur School Board and Decatur City Council. Tuesday's election has more of an impact on your day-to-day activities and life, Dellert said. The federal election doesn't raise your property taxes, your hotel taxes, or your city taxes, he added. In addition to school boards and municipal positions, the Tuesday's election also filled spots on community college, township, library, park, and fire district boards. It affects you directly, Dellert said, and nobody's here to vote on that. Election judges Kim Bramall and Barry Lausman were stationed at the Tabernacle Baptist Church on Wickles Road, which included Harristown voters. These elections dictate what happens in our little communities, Bramall said. More recently, many of those that do not take time to vote are tendered a ballot that includes few contested races and some positions without anyone to cast a vote for. That wasn't the case in Harristown, where voters had contest races for mayor and school board. Other contested races included the Mount Zion and Meridian school boards, as well as the village president in Niantic and trustees in Long Creek. The reason for low turnout may be because few people knew about the election, Lausman said. They don't promote them like they do the national elections. When the national elections come around, how many flyers do you get, he said. For the local elections, they don't have the money to spend on flyers and things like that. Hot topic issues can lure voters to the ballot box, the judges recognized. Unless each community has a big thing coming up on their ballot, they're not going to come out and support it, said election judge Alyssa Irwin. But it still all comes down to the money, Bramall said about the election results. Mitch Bublitz has voted in every election since he was 18 years old. It's my duty to vote, the 70-year-old Harristown resident said. He said he is aware elections that affect local politics aren't as popular among the community, but they should get out and vote, he said. Bublitz suggests children get involved in the voting process, especially when electing school board members. It starts your civic attitude at a very young age, he said. I attend school board meetings, and I don't have kids in the school anymore. On page A4, we also have photos of Cindy Fitzgerald talking with election judge Bob Lewis after voting during the consolidated election at Millikan University polling place in Decatur. And also Decatur Public Schools Board of Education President Bill Clevenger casting his ballot for the consolidated election at Millikan University. Now from our local news page. Arts and Education Showcases Works. From Donette Beckett in Decatur, the future of art can be seen in Decatur. The Arts and Education exhibit will be on display until April 4th on the third floor of the Decatur Area Council's Madden Art Center, 125 North Water Street. A closing reception will be from 5 to 6:30 p.m. Friday, April 4th, with an awards presentation starting at 5:30. Gallery 510, host of the Arts and Education exhibit, invited local high school students to display their work during the annual spring show. The exhibit was designed to promote local school art programs. Each school will have up to 30 pieces of artwork on display. Grade school students are featured in the Young Artist Showcase in January. According to Alec Goss, Gallery 510 executive director, more than a dozen schools are participating in this year's Arts and Education. They are all local schools, he said. Monetary awards will be distributed to the best of show winners, as well as first, second, and third place showings in each category. Categories include computer photography, painting, drawing, sculpture, ceramics and crafts, mixed media, and miscellaneous. There's more awesome stuff, Goss said about this year's artwork. Gallery 510 is one of Decatur's opportunities for artists to have their work displayed in galleries. The latest displays have shown unique artistic pieces emerging from recent experiences such as the pandemic. And financially, we're kind of back to where we were before COVID, Goss said. We're hanging in there. Another change in the creative process has included the introduction of artificial intelligence. We haven't quite reached the whole AI bump in the road yet, but it's coming, Goss said. Digital art is common among the work seen at Decatur, including the students' work in the Arts and Education exhibit, since photography is one of the artworks that can be manipulated. There's been some angry pieces in the last few years, Goss said, about recent exhibits, I think mostly from female artists. The director said he appreciates the show of negative emotions in art. I dig when an artist will make something and they're so passionate and angry about the point they're trying to make, Goss said. To view the works of local high school artists in the Arts and Education exhibit, visit the third floor of the Decatur Area Arts Council's Madden Art Center, located at 125 North Water Street, from 8:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Tuesday through Friday, or 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday. A free reception will be from 5 to 6:30 p.m. on Friday, April 4th. An awards presentation will start at 5:30 p.m. From our Life page, A7, on nutrition, from columnist Barbara Intermill, who is a registered dietitian. Clowning around with corny food jokes. No joke. I look forward to this column every year, and I cherish the contributions from you readers. Terry W. from St. Louis writes, I so enjoyed your column about corny jokes. My mom loved puns and would use them as often as she could. One that has to be heard instead of read is, I thought it was an oyster, but it's not. Lori M. in New York sent these two. A woman goes to a restaurant and asks if they serve crabs. Yes, ma'am, says the waiter. We serve everyone. A kangaroo hops into a bar, looks over the cocktail list, and orders a martini. Wow, says the bartender. We don't get a lot of kangaroos in here. The marsupial replies, and at these prices, you won't be getting a lot more. From Pinterest. A chocolate Easter bunny visits his therapist. What can I help you with today, says the professional. I don't know, doc, the bunny answers. I just feel so hollow inside. Professional tip from a cooking show host. If you can't get butter infused with the tears of virgin Dutch milkmaids, store-bought is fine. Another? Strength is the ability to break a chocolate bar into four pieces with your bare hands and then eat just one of those pieces. From Pioneer Woman Magazine. Did you hear about the restaurant on the moon? Great food. No atmosphere. And if you like Australian humor, these are from that country's local food connect. A boy runs into his parents' bedroom at 3 a.m. and says, Dad, Dad, there's a burglar in the kitchen eating all of Mum's leftover chili. The dad replies, Go back to bed, son. We'll bury him in the morning. Two slices of bread got married. The ceremony was going quite well until someone decided to toast the bride and groom. A man walks into a bar with a sandwich perched on his head. The bartender says, Why do you have a sandwich on your head? The man replies, My family always wears a sandwich on Wednesdays. The bartender says, It's Tuesday. The man hangs his head and says, Gosh, I must look pretty silly right now. A man decides to make his own honey, so he purchases 100 bees from a local beekeeper. When he gets home, he counts his bees and discovers he has 101. Being an honest man, he calls the beekeeper to tell him he has one too many. That's okay, says the beekeeper. The extra one's a freebie. A screwdriver goes into a bar. The bartender says, Hey, we have a drink named after you. The screwdriver says, You have a drink named Philip? Care to pasta joke or pun this way? Penny for your thoughts. Again from local news. Decatur Crazy Gunman gets 2 years, from Tony Reed in Decatur. The man who told police he carried a gun because Decatur crazy won't be seeing his hometown for a while. He just got sentenced to 2 years in prison. Yancer A. Barbie, 18, had been caught driving in the city while armed with a fully loaded 45 caliber semi-automatic handgun, for which he had no permit. When asked by Officer Jack Kaczynski with the Decatur Police Department why he carried the weapon, Barbie was quoted as making his crazy comment, adding, "I have to have it," according to a sworn affidavit Kaczynski signed. The traffic stop that led to the gun's discovery and Barbie's arrest dates to November 11th, and he appeared March 14th in Macon County Circuit Court. He took a plea deal negotiated by defense attorney Mark Wyckoff and admitted a charge of the aggravated unlawful use of a weapon. Presiding Judge Thomas Griffith then agreed to dismiss further charges accusing Barbie of armed violence, illegal possession of a weapon, and illegal possession of drugs as part of the plea deal. Writing in the sworn affidavit, Kaczynski said Barbie had been pulled over for a traffic infraction by members of the police department's community action team, which prioritizes getting illegally held guns off the street. Kaczynski noted that Barbie was already well known to officers after being looked at in several previous incidents involving gun violence, including the aggravated discharge of a weapon and first-degree murder. But his adult court record shows no previous convictions for gun-related crimes. The defendant, now housed at the Graham Correctional Center, isn't likely to be in custody for too long, however. Held in the Macon County Jail since his arrest, he gets a 4-month credit for that time, and he will also earn day-for-day credit while serving his prison sentence. From our front page, agriculture. Cover crop money slashed. Pritzker seeks 31% cut. Experts say it cuts runoff, aids soil. From Jennifer Bamberg, Investigate Midwest. Springfield. When Steve Steerwalt studied agriculture at the University of Illinois in the 70s, soil health wasn't commonly taught or discussed. Faculty often told their young farming students to put all their faith in commercial fertilizers. But over his 40 years as a corn and soybean farmer in Champaign County, Steerwalt said soil erosion, which can cause fertilizer and manure runoffs to end up in nearby rivers and streams, has become an increasingly serious problem. When we plowed pretty much everything except for a row near the fence line, Steerwalt said. The grass near the fence row kept getting taller, it seemed to me. I came to understand that it wasn't the fence row getting taller, it was the soil in the fields that was getting shorter. In the early 2010s, Steerwalt started experimenting with cover crops, which can help hold soil in place and reduce runoff pollution. This valuable resource that we take for granted, we were letting it get away, Steerwalt said. We have some of the best soil in the world here, and we have to protect it. 6 years ago, Illinois became the second state in the nation to offer subsidies to farmers for planting cover crops in the fall, an effort to reverse its status as one of the worst states for agriculture runoff. Demand for the Fall Cover for Spring Savings Program, which offers a $5 per acre discount on the following year's crop insurance premiums, has outpaced state funding every year since. However, despite the program's popularity and calls from environmentalists and farmers for its funding to increase, Governor J.B. Pritzker has proposed a 31% funding cut. Pritzker, a Democrat, recently proposed an overall $2 billion increase to next year's state budget, but he also recommended cuts to several programs, including reducing the cover crop insurance credit budget from $960,000 to $660,000. Pritzker's office did not comment, but the government referenced program cuts in a address. I have made difficult decisions, including to programs I have championed, which is hard for me, Pritzker said during his State of the State budget address in February. Two state lawmakers introduced bills this legislative session to increase the program's annual funding to $6.1 million. They say it's crucial to support the practice, which will benefit communities in Illinois and beyond. The bills did not clear a recent committee deadline. However, lawmakers can still negotiate funding for the program as they continue to work to pass a budget by the end of May. Illinois is one of the leading states for farm fertilizer runoff and one of the top contributors to the Gulf of Mexico's dead zone, a barren area of around 4,500 square miles of coastal waters deadly to fish, shrimp, and other marine life. It costs the region's fishing and tourism industry millions annually. Runoff from Illinois farms has only worsened, according to a 23-state study. From 2017 to 21, average nitrate and oxygen loads loads increased by 4.8% and total phosphorus loads increased by 35% compared to the 1980-96 baseline. Nutrient levels were highest between 2016 and 2020 before declining slightly. The improvement was attributed to regulatory permits on wastewater treatment plants, which also pollute waterways. However, nitrate levels remain well above the state's reduction goals. Less than 6% of Illinois farmland uses cover crops. The soil in Illinois is famously fertile and much of the land is flat. The soil isn't highly erodible like soil on a slope or a hill might be, but when fields are left bare after harvest, the soil can easily blow away in the wind or wash away in storms, depositing fertilizers and chemicals into waterways. Cover crops, which include winter wheat, crimson, clover, cereal rye, oats, or radish, are planted after harvest and before winter. The crops can reduce soil erosion, break up compacted soil, provide a habitat for beneficial insects and wildlife, and prevent latent fertilizer from leaching into rivers and streams. Since the Fall Cover for Spring Savings program began in 2019, the Illinois Department of Agriculture has received more applications than the program can fund. This year, the program sold out in 2 hours. Under current funding levels, only 200,000 acres are available, which advocates say is too small. At the rate conservation is being invested in right now for agriculture, it would take 200 years to hit the goals under the nutrient reduction strategy. And that's assuming there would be new adopters, said Elliot Clay, executive director of the statewide Association of Soil and Water Conservation District. The nutrient loss reduction strategy is a statewide multi-agency effort to reduce the amount of nutrients in Illinois' waterways and the Gulf of Mexico. The Policy Working Group's latest report, produced in 2023, found that to meet just half of its goals of reducing runoff, nearly all of Illinois' corn and soybean farmers would need to adopt cover crops. It doesn't mean the state won't meet the goal, a spokesperson for the NLRS team at University of Illinois Extension said in an emailed statement to Investigate Midwest. There is quite a bit of variability of riverine nutrient loads at watershed scales for nitrogen and phosphorus. However, the spokesperson added that more research, data acquisition, and planning are needed at watershed scales. Out of the state's 26.3 million acres of farmland, an estimated 3 to 6% grew cover crops in 2022, according to USDA data. Christopher Reynolds, Midwest Director for American Farmland Trust, and a fifth-generation farmer in Nokomis, said Illinois needs to see cover crop adoption of at least 15%, and more state and federal incentives are needed. The Gulf Hypoxia Task Force, a federally funded program through the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, has provided additional funding to supplement the cover crop program. However, the Trump administration's freeze of some federal grants might put those funds at risk. Earlier this year, the Illinois Department of Agriculture was awarded $25 million grant dollars from the EPA to support conservation practices for the next 3 years. We don't know the status of the grant, said Jerry Costello II, director of Illinois Department of Agriculture, while speaking to the House Appropriations Committee on March 12th. Last that we've heard, things looked good, but that's been a while. We've got 2.5 months left in this process in Illinois, right? Added Costello, citing the time the budget has to finalize its 26 budget, which begins in July 25. 2.5 months plus or minus, so surely we'll have some guidance. We certainly hope so. Because of the sheer scale of the agriculture industry, government regulations requiring conservation practices can be difficult to carry out, said Clay, the director of the Soil and Water Conservation District. Farmland covers 75% of the entire state of Illinois, and even if all farmers employed precision sensors to track runoff points, it would cost billions, Clay said. There would also need to be an army of workers to track and enforce regulations. However, industry self-regulating doesn't usually work, and it hasn't worked in ag because that's basically what they've been doing for the most part, Clay said. What's needed, he added, is more public-private partnerships. Stairwell, the farmer in Champaign County, helped develop STAR, or Saving Tomorrow's Agricultural Resources, which gives farmers a 5-star score based on their conservation practices. The state adopted the framework in 2023 to support the state's nutrient loss reduction goals. Steerwalt said the goal is to get companies to purchase agricultural commodities based on the rating system. If the public and industries that rely on agricultural goods for ethanol or food products want sustainably raised crops, then the farmers will grow them, he said. Cover crop barriers include both cost and culture. Cover crops have long-term benefits, but can be expensive and require extra work. Crop yields may even decrease during the first few years. Cover crops cost roughly $35 to $40 an acre, and farmers don't make a direct profit from it. The crops are planted in the fall and aren't harvested. Instead, as the plants die and decompose, they provide nutrients back into the soil for the new commodity crop. Some farmers terminate the crops with chemical herbicides. But the $5 an acre from the Fall Cover for Spring Savings Program acts as an incentive for doing the right thing, which will pay off later, said Ed Dubrick, a small pasture poultry farmer in Cisna Park, who also farms vegetables with his wife. It's an investment because you know you're doing right by the environment, Dubrick said. You know you're doing right by your land, and long term, you're going to build your soil health, and that will impact your bottom line. There are also cultural barriers to planting cover crops. Row crop farmers often pride themselves on tidy, neat rows, and cover cropping and no-till can leave fields looking messy. Walter Lynn, a retired certified public accountant and farmer in Springfield, said farmers sometimes only cover crop fields that are out of sight from their neighbors or the road because they're afraid they'll be judged. At a recent soil health conference in Omaha, Lynn said he met a farmer who believes he can't openly discuss his practices with his equipment dealer, saying, "There's a vulnerability that ag doesn't deal well with." But at the conference, Lynn said the farmer found a welcoming atmosphere. "It's so good to come to this space at this meeting. I feel like I'm a member of the Cover Crop Witness Protection." Now from our opinion page, our topic is serving your country. And the first column from Chris Talgo. Talgo is the editorial director at the Heartland Institute in suburban Chicago. Compulsory rule would promote unity and purpose. As a libertarian and conservative, I understand that compulsory national service could seem like an infringement on personal freedom, but I still think it is worth exploring under specific guidelines. When most people hear the term national service, they automatically think of the military. Many nations, including Israel and Switzerland, require at least some military service. This is not the case in the United States, which has an all-volunteer military. In the United States, less than 1% of the population are active duty service members. Though it would be beneficial to encourage more Americans to enlist in the military, it shouldn't be mandatory. Yet imposing some national service requirements would pay big dividends, given how divided our country has become in recent years. Several studies show that national service increases civic engagement, helps develop critical life skills, and has a positive impact on young adults' health, safety, and well-being. The idea of compulsory national service also is popular among the American people. This includes young Americans who would be most affected by a national service requirement. 3/4 of 18 to 24-year-olds support an 18-month national service commitment, according to a survey. An obligatory tenure in national service for all U.S. citizens on graduating from high school would serve many purposes. This includes a fostering a renewed sense of national unity and pride. Opponents of compulsory service argue that it would violate some of the nation's most cherished principles. They maintain it would directly encroach on Americans' personal freedom. This is misguided, considering all citizens must uphold several duties. This includes serving on juries, and men can be drafted during a time of war. As citizens of a nation, we should feel obligated to participate in activities that build a sense of national identity and purpose. Moreover, we should be willing to sacrifice at least a little for the good of the country. Unfortunately, sacrificing anything, even a few months, for the sake of the country is a tall task. It wasn't always this way. In 1961, during his inaugural address, President John F. Kennedy said, "Ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country." Those words still resonate. Of course, citizens could do many things for the country if a stint in national service became mandatory. Imagine a program that enlists young Americans to pick up trash and litter in their local communities. Or how about a program that recruits young people to help provide care at housing centers for older adults? The possibilities are almost endless. Today, when Americans complete their high school studies, they are expected to join the workforce or continue their education. As a former high school teacher, I know that many 18-year-olds are not ready for this next stage of their life. As such, a brief period in which these young Americans would be required to choose a national service program would help them mature. It would also aid them as they contemplate what they would like to pursue as they reach adulthood. On our sports page, we have a photo of Illinois State Guard Elise Knudsen and Trista Feta celebrating after their win over Louisiana Tech on Monday during the WNIT at CEFQ Arena. Former Millikan star Elise Knudsen leads Redbirds into WNIT Final Four. To say you're one of the last 10 teams of 362 standing in college basketball, that's what it's going to be. What a privilege, what an honor. Kristen Gillespie, ISU women's coach. From Randy Reinhardt in Normal. With the Illinois State women's basketball team clinging to a one-point lead after three quarters, the fate of Monday's women's national invitation tournament game hung in the balance. ISU guard Elise Knudsen forcefully tipped the scales with 13 fourth-quarter points in a span of 4 minutes and 54 seconds to hand the Redbirds the cushion needed to close out a 78-70 WNIT Grade 8 victory over Louisiana Tech before a CEFQ Arena crowd of 2,168. Knudsen hit two jumpers early in the fourth quarter before reeling off a trio of three-pointers over 98 seconds to lift ISU into a 70-59 advantage. "My teammates find me on about anything," Knudsen said. "Catch and shoot threes are my kind of jam. I kind of got in my groove." Knudsen was 5 of 7 from three-point range to set a program record for three-pointers in a season with 90. ISU, 24-12, will stay home to face Troy, 23-13, in the WNIT's Fab Four on Wednesday at 6:30 p.m. at CEFQ Arena. The Redbirds are in the WNIT semifinals for the first time since 2011 and the fourth time overall. Our food page covers Lent-friendly fare. Consider adding these dishes to your Fish Fridays menu. We have recipes for potato and cheese pierogies, boom boom shrimp, halouski. Halouski is a humble old-school dish made from cabbage, onions, and noodles that originated in Eastern Europe and was brought to the U.S. in the early 19th century. There are as many recipes for it as there are cooks. The cabbage-to-noodle ratio depends on who's making it. Some add kielbasa or bacon for extra flavor. We also have a recipe for pesto chicken quinoa bowl, bright with flavor. And our final recipe is for spam musubi. In Hawaii, we eat a lot of spam, like almost 7 million cans of the processed pork product a year, more than any other state. By far the most popular way we consume spam is in musubi form. Spam became popular in Hawaii during World War II when troops introduced the canned meat. Its long shelf life made it a wartime staple. The musubi snack is a slice of grilled spam on a bed of white rice and wrapped together with a seaweed, nori, similar to Japanese onigiri, and was created in Japanese internment camps during the war. You can use pre-made sauces or marinades, and you can get spam musubi marinade online. And you can also buy cheese and potato pierogi frozen. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for Wednesday, April 2nd. Please stay tuned.